Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, well, you know how this goes. We should think about these things. Those are the good words of St. Paul, and it seems like a very good idea. And I think we should take it actually to a whole nother level, and we should talk about these things too. That is what we love to do on Call Me Catholic. I'm Peggy Normanton, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a light and hopefully very lively hour of conversation intended to affirm, explore, and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times, so we can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh yeah, you can call me Catholic. And we certainly could not get this conversation even started without my trusty engineer and chief fact checker, Jimmy G.
I am ready to take it to a whole other level. You said those key words, and I thought, This is the day we're going to take it to a whole new level.
Okay. Tell me what you got in mind, Jimmy G.
I haven't the foggiest idea. We'll find out.
Well, listen, we never know what to expect in the hour that unfolds in front of us, because we always have a few surprises, and it's very spontaneous, and it's live. That's what gives us all our energy, right?
And we never know to what level we'll bring it, you know?
Sometimes it just kind of stays at the same level. Hey, I want to wish you a happy Father's Day, Jimmy G. A happy Father's Day weekend.
Thank you very much. Yes.
You are the proud father of four.
Yes.
Plus you have a daughter-in-law.
I do. That's right.
Yeah. So that
That's
makes
right.
five.
That's right.
And do they have any special she plans for you this weekend?
I do not know. I do not know what level they're going to bring it to. I know that I have a strong suspicion that I've got a yummy, delicious caramel apple in my future.
Oh, that's
That's
nice.
Usually what they get me.
Okay. And does it end there? The celebration ends with the caramel apple?
No. They give me extra loves, hugs, and kisses.
Yeah.
And
you got a great family, and I know you're going to be surrounded by all their love and affection. Okay, Jimmy G and I are coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope on the shimmering Christ Cathedral campus in Orange County. We are the Diocese of Orange, snuggled in there between Los Angeles and San Diego counties in Southern California. This campus, this is a very popular destination for weddings. And when I arrive on campus every Saturday morning, I always like to catch a glimpse of the wedding party. You know, they're always so excited and nervous and beautiful. And now here in the Diocese of Orange, we've got 1.2 million Catholics, I think. And we've got lots and lots of beautiful cultures, different cultures. Mm-hmm. And you really see that reflected and manifested in these weddings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they all have different customs, rituals, different clothing, and different kinds of decor and floral appointments in their wedding ceremonies. And it's really fun to see the differences in all the cultures. But the common thread among all of these different kind of outward expressions and decorations is a common sense of expectation and gravity, actually. They know something big is about to happen. There's kind of this nervous excitement. A marriage is about to be sanctified in the church. A union is about to take place, and the world will be forever altered by it. Now, we are entering into what is considered the busiest wedding season of the year, June, July, and August. This is Father's Day weekend, and I know there are hundreds, if not thousands, of fathers proudly walking their daughters down the aisle. In fact, my family is going to a wedding this afternoon.
That's right.
This
you
very
said that.
Afternoon. Yeah. Very dear family friends. Their second daughter is getting married. So all our boys came into town for it. And, you know, it's like family to us. So we're very excited to participate in it and to witness it and to see what comes of it.
Very nice.
Yeah. You know, weddings are fun. Do you enjoy going to weddings?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a no.
You know,
I'm looking at the facial expression. The word is yes. The face is saying no, not really.
Well, I don't.
Maybe it's a girl thing.
I don't do the dressy up stuff all that often, and so then I usually come to find out, oh, this doesn't fit me. That's usually my issue.
Well, yeah, women have that experience too, Jimmy.
No,
but I love all the details. And even there's two ways to go to a wedding. You know, you go either as really, really close friend, family, and then you're kind of part of the energy. But my husband and I have also attended weddings of business colleagues and things like that, where you're kind of on the outskirts and you really don't know people, but that's fun too, because then you just get to watch it. You get to watch the family dynamic, and, you know, families are at their kind of pinnacle there during a wedding, and emotions run high.
I agree.
And we have had an announcement in our family. Our middle son announced his engagement, the first of our three sons to get engaged. So I'm particularly right now excited and vigilant about observing all these details that we're because now we're going to be planning a wedding, and I'm projecting a bit, I guess.
I think this is the first time we've announced this.
I guess so, yeah. Nick is marrying Natalie, and we don't have too many details yet, but they will unfold. I said to him when he told me that he had proposed and she had accepted, and her name is Natalie. She's a lovely, lovely young woman, a nurse. And I said, are you sure she's not marrying you for your last name? Because Natalie Normandin is a rockin' name.
Natalie Normandin.
Natalie Normandin. Woman of the world.
Future radio host.
That's such a cool name. Well, she's a cool gal too, so we're very fortunate. So indulge me, if you will, today, listeners, because we're going to talk about weddings, Catholic weddings to be exact, and we've got a few experts on board to share their wisdom and experience with all of you guys. First up, we have Dr. Joseph White, who is the National Catechetical Consultant for Our Sunday Visitor. That's that really fun Catholic magazine, kind of like Parade. But he's also author of Together in God's Love. It's a marriage preparation series, and the Catholic Church is so well respected for its pre-Cana series of helping prepare engaged couples for marriage. He knows a lot about the protocol of Catholic weddings. And then we're going to get into some of the fun stuff with Catholic National Wedding Planner Andy Compton, who also helped found and runs the very cool website Spoken Bride. It's a rich resource for women hoping to plan a wedding that reflects their love and passion for both their betrothed and their creator. And I can't wait for that conversation. But first things first, it's time for our Call Me Catholic countdown, which this week will be, here we go, my top five favorite different cultural wedding traditions. Now, Orange County is one of the most culturally diverse communities in the world, really. We integrate Asian, Hispanic, Caucasian ethnicities, and we see lots of unique expressions of culture in different wedding ceremonies, especially right here on our campus. Now, I did a little research and came up with a fun list of different wedding traditions from different cultures. So I thought I'd share those with you. So here we go.
The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
Thank you, Jimmy G, for that intro. I hear we're working on some new Call Me Catholic Countdown music, too.
That's the rumor.
Mellow, a little mellow.
It's only a rumor.
This works for today, though. Okay, so number five. I'm going to share with you some of my favorite cultural, traditions that go on in weddings in different parts of the world. Okay, now in Russia, so my number five one is the Russian tradition that grooms have to kind of work to get their fiancé to come to the wedding. That may be true in a lot of cultures, but in Russia, the groom has to go to the bride's home, and he has to kind of beg. So he brings everybody gifts, he brings flowers, and it's evolved into this kind of fun exchange where people try to test him and trick him and give him riddles before they will turn the bride over to him for the ceremony. So, you know, I'm sure that this very charming tradition maybe had a grave origin in Russia that might not have been quite so charming at its origin, but it's evolved into kind of a fun tradition where the groom goes over and he begs for the bride and tries to bring gifts and everything. Okay, number four. Now, in Mexico, the godparents play a very important role in the wedding. And in many cases, the godparents even host the wedding because that's how important the role of a godparent is in the upbringing of a young man or a young woman. And the wedding would be the pinnacle of that. So that's a very sweet tradition, I think. And frequently you will see the godparents during the Catholic wedding ceremony drape a rosary bead over the head, a large one, I guess, over the heads of the bride and groom and drape it on them as sort of a symbolic way of binding them in union with Mary at their wedding, which is very sweet.
Nice.
Okay, number three. I think this one's really interesting. The Chinese have a lot of different really cool cultural influences in their wedding that are very, very uniquely Chinese. But one of them, and I have attended this because my dear cousin Jackie married a Chinese man, and Jackie's father did host her wedding. And traditionally, sometimes the groom's family and Chinese families host the wedding. But the groom's family hosted a huge Chinese feast after the wedding, and it had minimum 12 courses in there. And that's very traditional. You have at least 12 courses, and every single piece of food you get at a Chinese wedding feast has a symbolism. And so you are supposed to ask at your table, because there'll be a little host at your table, what does this fish mean? What does this chicken foot mean? What is this? Because they all have significance in what they're wishing the married couple. Yeah. Okay, number two would be in Poland. Now, Poland probably has lots and lots of beautiful traditions because they're such a Catholic country. But one of the ones that I loved reading about was before the wedding ceremony itself, the bride and groom meet in the bride's home, and they kneel down and they receive a blessing from the bride's parents, and they bless them with holy water too, and then any of the family and friends that are in the home also bless them before they go off onto their ceremony, which I think is a beautiful thing, and the Polish people have such great, great Catholic heart.
Nice.
Okay, and number one, my number one favorite cultural tradition in weddings would be the Celtic wedding tradition. Now, I gotta say this, my sons know this, I love a man in a kilt. Just got to say, I love kilts. And in a Celtic wedding, the men will often wear their kilt, which bears the colors of the groom's clan. And then after the exchange of rings, the new husband might pin a plaid or tartan sash that bears the pattern and shades of his family lineage on the shoulders of his wife. Oh. I think that's very sweet.
Yeah.
Very colorful and lovely. So there's room in the Catholic wedding ceremony celebration for many of these beautiful personal rituals and cultural traditions without taking away anything from the Catholic sacramental rite of the marriage.
Amen.
So, yeah. And just, you know, when you start digging into some of the interesting, rituals and the history of how these things evolved into the wedding ceremony. It's kind of interesting. But we don't have time for that today because we've got some great guests. In fact, Dr. Joseph White, author of Together in God's Love, is going to be up in a minute. He wrote this marriage preparation series for engaged couples, and he's going to be joining us in just a second. And then after we speak with him, we'll speak with Catholic wedding planner Andy Compton, who is also business editor of Spoken Bride, a Catholic lifestyle blog for brides and newlyweds. And she'll bring her perspective on weddings into our conversation today. And hey, I want to remind you all you special listeners out there, because you're all special, to check out our Facebook page. It's not quite a lifestyle blog like Spoken Bride, but it's fun and it's informative and it's on Facebook. So check it out, facebook.com/callmecatholic. Give us a like and join the family. We post lots of pictures and podcasts. It's lots of fun.
Like us.
We'll be back with more wedding talks. So stay with us. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Helping you navigate the daily struggles and blessings of life. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Welcome, wedding guests. We're playing Wedding Crasher today on Call Me Catholic. I am your host, Peggy Normandin, and today is our salute to all the June brides and grooms out there who are preparing to exchange vows after no doubt months and months of preparation. You know, people get married. Thank you, Jimmy G. Thank you for cueing the music. People get married all year long. But of course, June, July, August seem to be particularly popular months, maybe because of weather or vacation time. So we are in a nuptial state of mind today. See, here comes the bride now.
That's my organ solo right there. I'm pretty good, huh?
You're very good. Another talent we didn't know about, Jimmy G.
It's not really me.
We have brought in an expert today to share his informed perspective on the subject of Catholic weddings, Dr. Joseph White. Is a child and family psychologist and national catechetical consultant for our Sunday Visitor publishing and curriculum. Dr. White previously worked for 7 years as director of family counseling and family life in the Diocese of Austin. He is the author of 10 books and numerous resources on ministry and family life, including A Catholic Parent's Toolbox and Together in Love, a Marriage Preparation Series. Dr. Joseph White, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Thank you, Peggy. It's great to be with you.
Hey, thanks for joining us today. So let me start by, may I call you Joseph?
Sure.
I love that name, of course, because my favorite saint is Saint Joseph. So I'm going to be gravitating toward that. Hey, so Dr. Joseph, how has the Catholic wedding ceremony changed, if at all, over the last, let's say, century? For example, if a daughter, mother, and granddaughter were all married in the Catholic Church, would their ceremonies have differed much?
Well, in the last several decades, they wouldn't have differed much because for the last few decades, we've been using the same rite of marriage that came right after Vatican II in the 1969 edition of the rite of marriage. However, there have been some minor changes just in the last year. There's a new order of celebrating matrimony that went into effect last year. It became mandatory in December. I don't think that the changes will be that noticeable to, you know, your average person in the pew who's there watching a wedding. There are some new provisions for a couple of different cultural traditions. For example, the lasso that you mentioned in the last segment, mm-hmm. that's actually mentioned as something that can be included as the exchange of arras, which is another cultural tradition.
The exchange of what, Dr. Smith?
Of arras, which is an Hispanic culture, Mexican cultural tradition, in which the couple exchanges these coins that are a symbol. And traditionally, it's the man who gives them to the woman as a symbol of providing for the family. I've also seen it done where the exchange happens both ways as well.
Okay. Well, the thing that I have noticed in recent weddings that I've attended is a pronounced difference in the way the bridal party processes down. Now, I'm used to the priest coming out on the altar and facing the procession as they come down, but I have seen in the last couple of weddings the priest actually process down before the bride.
Yeah, and you may see that more. And here's why that's happening. There are two different forms in the order for celebrating matrimony for the way that this procession happens. And so in one particular case, in the first form, the priest and the servers and vestments greet the bridal party at the door, and then everybody enters into the procession. The ministers go first, followed by the priest, then the bride and bridegroom, and then possibly the parents and two witnesses. In the second form, the priests and the servers go to the place in the sanctuary prepared for the couple or to his chair, and then he greets the couple. And so both of those are valid and appropriate. However, in this new order for celebrating matrimony, one of the purposes for the revision of the rite was to really make the liturgy more central, The liturgy is center stage here in the order for celebrating matrimony, and so you may see some differences that are reflective of that.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, but either way is acceptable right now.
Either way is fine, right? Okay. Both are in the order.
Now, Joseph, you are familiar with you actually authored a marriage, pre-marriage series, education, pre-Cana kind of series for engaged couples. Now, let's go over some popular questions that priests or
sure.
marriage planners in the Catholic Church must often receive from engaged couples, and I'm sure they get them every time. So they may say, can we write our own vows? And what's your response to that?
Well, first, I want to respond with some understanding for why couples might want to do that, because they want to make this very personal and they want to bring their own personalities and their own words into the liturgy. However, the answer is no. Unfortunately, that's not permitted in the Catholic Church, and there's some good reasons for that. One is that one of the ways that the Church expresses the unity of all believers is through the unity of the liturgy, in this case, the wedding. And especially in those essential parts, and the reception of consent, those vows is an essential part of the liturgy. Secondly, it's the mutual consent of the bride and groom to be married that actually brings about the grace of the sacrament. And so because of that, the sacredness of that moment, the Church ensures that by providing the wording, the proper wording there. And then finally, because the consent is what makes the marriage, it's important for everybody witnessing to be clear that the bride and groom have actually declared their mutual consent. And so the precision of the words is very important. You know, if we think of, for example, in legal settings where it's very important to be clear, we have to say certain words sometimes so that clarity is evident there.
Well, I love the way you articulated that, because it was rational, it was calm, it was sane. I think sometimes parents may make the mistake of getting too emotional, like, no, that's the way it's been done, that's the way we're going to do it, and you're going to do it that way because that's how your dad and I did it. But there's really actually, very sound thinking behind it. And I guess I would say to a couple that wanted to write their own vows, definitely write your own vows and exchange them on your wedding night personally. And then every year, write new vows and exchange them with each other, because every year you're going to learn more about marriage and you're going to learn more about each other. And those little personal private vows that you exchange with each other will have great meaning and a relevance in your life. But what you're declaring in the ceremony is not a declaration of love. It's a vow. It's a covenant that
That's
you are
right.
making. And I think that
That's
can,
right,
can
Peggy. And another option for couples is if they would like to profess their love to one another in their own words at the reception. They can do that
yes.
as well. If
nice.
They want to do this publicly in front of their family and friends in their own words, that's another place where that can happen. As long as it's clear that the actual vows within the liturgy were said in a certain way.
Sure, sure. Now, here's another question that I bet you get, that people get often in churches. Can we hold our ceremony outside? Can we get a priest to say our ceremony, our wedding ceremony outside?
Okay, So in most cases, Catholics are required to be married in a Catholic church building, but there are some exceptions. For example, when a Catholic marries somebody who's not Catholic, the Catholic party can request permission from the local bishop to celebrate the wedding at the other person's place of worship. But because church law states that a wedding may be held in, quote, some other suitable place, is exactly how it's stated, besides a Catholic church, it's technically possible that the local bishop might allow an outdoor wedding. However, this is very rare. Very few of them do, because it's supposed to be in a place that's recognized by everyone as a sacred place. And so, you know, a church building certainly would convey that. There are, of course, many, many people who consider outdoor places sacred places. And in some cases, it might be allowed, but in most cases, no.
Well, they're certainly beautiful. And so I can understand completely how a bride and groom would love to picture themselves in the redwoods or at the beach and things like that. So, like their wedding pictures, you can still take those pictures and they'll be in your book.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm sure priests get all these questions. Can we do this? Can we do this? What are some of the ways, Joseph, that a couple can personalize their wedding ceremony without compromising church protocol?
Well, one of the ways is through including some additional texts and messages in the wedding program, for example. You know, you can include some different kinds of messages to those who are attending, as well as words to each other there in that program. Also, and many people don't realize this until right at the last minute, that there are lots of options for choosing readings that are included in the order for celebrating matrimony. So people have actually some different options in choosing each reading, and they choose their own based on the ones that are meaningful to them within limits. I mean, there are certain readings that are chosen by the church as really being connected with marriage. Also, those cultural adaptations that we talked about before, and two new ones, as I mentioned, that have been officially incorporated as options within the English marriage rites are the exchange of arras and also the lasso, which is the double rosary that you were mentioning before. So lots of options. There are, of course, lots of options with respect to some of the other trappings of wedding celebrations, like cakes and dresses.
And dresses and bridesmaids,
you know,
and bridal
like
party. Hey,
absolutely.
So, Joseph, would you suggest that there is a minimum waiting period that we should sort of suggest for engaged couples to consider before getting married? And is there a maximum period where you say, that's too long to wait for you to have your engagement? 2.5 years, that's a long time.
Well, you know, it's really important for us to recognize that marriage is a vocation. And when you talk about, you know, people discerning a vocation to the priesthood or religious life, this is usually a process of discernment and preparation that lasts, that does indeed last several years, and for good reason. Most people don't discern their marriage for several years, but it is really important to look at what the research says about discernment of an important decision like this. So when we look at the research on marriage preparation, almost nobody calls the wedding off within 3 months of the wedding, because a lot of practical preparations have already been made and things like that. More people call the wedding off within 6 months, and even more within a year. And why that's important is that sometimes we realize this is not a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And if we've given ourselves enough time to realize that and discern that, you know, I have a sister, for example, who was married and later that marriage was annulled, and will say, you know, 2 weeks before I got married, I knew I was making a big mistake, but it felt like it was too late. You know, they get kind of rushed into all of this stuff. And so for that reason, many dioceses do actually impose a mandatory period of preparation. In my own Diocese of Austin, we ask that couples begin preparations at least 6 months before the wedding date. Now, there are sometimes some exceptions to that for various kinds of cases, but those would be individual exceptions. And most dioceses actually do have a minimum period of preparation.
Well, can you stay with us through the break, Dr. Joseph Smith? Because I have a few other questions I'd really like to get into with you. And I want to also invite our listeners to call in if you have some questions for our expert. The number is 714 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. We're talking with Dr. Joseph Smith. He's an expert. He's actually written a series of education programs for couples preparing to get married, and he knows a lot. And I really want to get into with you in the next conversation and after the break about what we offer as a Catholic Church for engaged couples. I think that's a really interesting. Sure. I'd like to compare what other churches offer and how couples can really benefit from this. So stay with us. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to the wedding edition of Call Me Catholic on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hello, and here comes the bride. Yep, I am Peggy Normandin. We're talking weddings today on Call Me Catholic because it's June, and we're entering the high holy season for weddings. And we are exploring that subject with Dr. Joseph Smith. Joseph Smith is the National Catechetical Consultant for our Sunday Visitor, Great Magazine, and he is author of Together in God's Love, and a marriage preparation series. He's also author of 10 other books, but we're focusing today on the marital stuff. So thanks for staying with us through this conversation, Dr. Joseph Smith. I wanted to, and thank you, Jimmy G, for our recessional. That's the recession. That's when the bride and groom are walking down.
And Peggy, it's Dr. Joseph White.
Dr. Joseph White.
Joseph Smith is the Mormon
the founder of the Mormon faith. Very awkward mistake. I'm so sorry, Dr. Joseph White. Okay. First I didn't get you online, and now I'm calling you by your wrong name. You have every reason to just completely divorce me from your life.
Well, now they know we're live. We can't fake this.
Hey, so Dr. Joseph White, let's get into the marriage preparation training that Catholic couples are required to do. Now, this is a mandate in our Catholic Church. Before we get into that, I want to ask you, do any other religions mandate that?
There are some religions that mandate some kind of marriage preparation. However, it seems that the Catholic Church has the most comprehensive mandate across the dioceses around the world because it's built right into canon law that people have to have a suitable preparation for marriage and be properly disposed to the sacrament.
So what exactly happens in these courses? Now, I know I went through one of them 35 years ago when I was preparing to marry my husband. I know you went through one, Jimmy G went through one. But I think a lot of engaged couples have a different idea of what it's going to be. They think it's going to be a lot of fire and brimstone or a lot of boring stuff. In its best form, what does this series offer engaged couples?
Sure. Well, you know, it varies from parish to parish and from diocese to diocese, but it usually involves one or more of several different things. One would be a pre-marriage inventory, such as the focus or the prepare. And sometimes people misunderstand these and they think they're like compatibility tests or things mm-hmm. like that, or, you know, a test to see whether the church is really going to allow them to be married or something. What these really are things that help identify a couple's strengths and also a couple's, the places where couples need additional dialogue. You know, what we tend to do, during the courtship phase or really any time that we're meeting somebody new and we have a feeling we really like them is we start steering some of those conversations away from things where we think we might have disagreement mm-hmm. and toward those things that we really have in common. And what's important about that is that there are sometimes some really key important issues that couples might have a sense that they have differences about sort of subconsciously, but they're sort of avoiding talking about them because of that. And they might be things like children or financial spending habits or hopes and dreams for the future or other kinds of things like that. So the focus and the prepare also help identify some of those issues where you can say, you know, you guys are thinking really differently about these things and it's important to talk this out. That doesn't mean you can't get married or that you're incompatible, but it does mean that we've got to find the common ground here so that when this does become more important down the road, that you're able to stay together and have a strong marriage.
Well,
so it begins there.
Okay, go ahead.
And then in some cases there are some, you know, weekend retreats or classes where couples learn more about what is a sacramental marriage, what are we going to be promising, as well as the immediate preparations with the priest or the deacon, kind of planning the liturgy and those kinds of things as well.
Now, can a couple shop around for a format that works with them? Because I know some offer one-on-one counseling through this. Some offer a class that you have to go to every Thursday night for a month. And there are also weekends. So can you shop around? You don't necessarily have to do that engagement training at the parish where you're getting married.
Well, it depends on the person who's going to be celebrating the wedding. So, you know, because it really ultimately is his responsibility, the priest or the deacon, to make sure that the couple is adequately prepared.
Okay.
And so, you know, the first priority probably is to find who's going to be marrying you. Right. And it, technically speaking, for somebody who's an active Catholic, it ought to be the first place you ought to go is the pastor of your own parish. If you're going to get married in another parish, technically speaking, there needs to be some permission for that to happen. And so going to the pastor of your own parish is important first. Don't shop around to the extent that you're getting on the internet and looking for the quick and easy.
Right. Okay. Good point.
There are lots of priests for hire who aren't real priests out there.
Yes.
And so, you know, go to your pastor or go to your diocese to find out what the options are for marriage preparation. A lot of times there's a diocesan program as well that's accepted by all the parishes. But first stop is to the person who's going to be actually performing the ceremony.
Okay. So really what they need to know, though, is they will enjoy and benefit from this. It's not going
Absolutely.
To be dreadful. I have never talked to a couple my age, younger age, ages that have attended these things and found them to be a waste of time. For the most part, you will really be enriched by it.
And the statistics back that up, Peggy. 94% of people say that the marriage preparation process they went to was actually very beneficial in living out the sacrament of marriage and living out their married life. The other 6% might say, well, you know, we kind of sat through those classes and it was kind of formality. And quality varies from place to place,
sure.
too. And so maybe
yeah.
in those cases, the quality just wasn't the same. But the overwhelming majority say this really did help and it really has made our marriage stronger.
Well, and I think it's a really important thing for a parish to invest in. Invest in welcoming, embracing, informing these married couples. I don't think every parish does a good job of being a friendly open gate to not necessarily you can have what you want, but here's how we do it. I noticed in looking around on different internet sites, Dr. Joseph White, that there was a parish. I just came across this church in Cleveland, Ohio, St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Cleveland, Ohio. I have no affiliation with it, but I noticed in searching around on wedding stuff, their church name came up, and they have this beautiful dimension to their website that gives all this information about what the Catholic Church, what that particular parish expects of the engaged couple, what you can do in your ceremony. It was very informational, and I thought that was a very thoughtful and very welcoming thing to have on the website.
That is really nice, Peggy. You know, it's important that we see this as a church, that we see this as an evangelization moment. We have a lot of young
yeah.
couples who are not particularly active in the faith, even though they might have been raised Catholic, and they come back to the church for the sacrament.
Right.
And we can see that as, oh, well, you know, they just want something from the church now, and they'll come and they'll go. But I think we need to be more hopeful than that, and we need to say, hey, here's a moment when we have right. an opportunity to reengage
yeah.
with these young adults, usually young adults in many cases anyway, and welcome them and give them a good feeling about who they are as Catholics and who we are as a community.
And how valued they will be as a married couple in our church and as they were as single people. So before we close, can you give our engaged listeners out there some really sage advice, Dr. Joseph White?
Well, one of the things that I would say is as you prepare for the wedding, a lot of times the practical preparations are the first things that many couples think of, you know, booking the church and the reception hall and getting the dress and the cake and things like that. Don't neglect those spiritual preparations. Remember that this is a vocation in our Catholic Church. It's a sacrament. And with that sacrament comes grace, and that grace is going to help you stay together and be unified and live out this marriage in the way that you hope and dream that you will. And so make sure that you're taking the time to discern that and not neglecting those spiritual preparations for marriage.
Beautiful. Dr. Joseph White, thanks so much for sharing all your great knowledge and experience with us. Catholic wedding planning is a very exciting, but it's a challenging, it's an emotional undertaking. And the more information and the more resources we can make available to couples planning their wedding, the less confusion and disappointment there's likely to be. So thanks for all you do to support their approach to this sacrament in our church. And by the way, we never got around to talking about your consulting work on our Sunday Visitor, but that's a great, really reader-friendly magazine for Catholics. So thanks for all that you do for our good church, and happy Father's Day.
Thank you. Thanks, Peggy. It was great to be with you.
Okay, God bless, and keep up the good work. Okay, we've got Catholic Wedding Coordinator Andy Compton up next, but first I've got a question for you. I want to ask you if you have access to EWTN television. Now, you know, of course, that EWTN has a rich, curated, extensive, brilliant, educational, and entertaining television program there. We've got 24 hours of everything from daily mass to news shows and talk shows. But if your local cable station doesn't offer EWTN, you're missing out on all this terrific programming, right? Well, here's what you do. You get Apple TV. It's a device that you buy. It's not a service. And it allows you to instantly stream EWTN to your TV. Now, you do need a high net internet connection, but that's all. It's a free channel. So with the Apple TV device, you can stream EWTN to your TV all day long. Now, you get to watch all your favorite EWTN personalities. I mean, it's fun to listen to us on the radio, but to watch Raymond Arroyo, Father Mitch Pacwa, Jeanette Bankovic, Father Spitzer, Marcus Grody, yeah, get your Apple TV device, stream the EWTN channel to your TV, and you'll be keeping company with these guys all day long. So remember to get your EWTN on your TV, get your Apple device, and you will realize that EWTN is everywhere. It's everywhere.
It's apples and oranges.
Hey, Andy Compton is our guest now. She is a Catholic wedding coordinator based in San Diego and the business director of Spoken Bride, a Catholic lifestyle blog for brides and newlyweds. She's been married to her groom, Matt, for almost 10 years. And together they have four young children, and she loves to do anything creative. So, Andy Compton, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Hi, Peggy. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, before we dig into a lot of bridal talk, I want to remind our listeners that you can call in with any questions that you might have. We got an expert on us with us here. The number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. Marvelous Matt, our call screener, will put you through. Okay, so Andy, your marriage was 10 years ago, and you're in the business of planning weddings and counseling brides. Do you ever look back on your own wedding and think, I could have done this differently. I wish I'd done that differently.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I really wish I would have done. I wish I would have kept the bolero that I had made, like a little jacket over my dress the whole time. It was just as a little reminder of just modesty. And it makes, I don't know, they're so beautiful on dresses. Looking back, that's just one of the little things that I wish I would have done differently.
So did you have a strapless dress and then you wore the bolero over it?
Exactly. 10 years ago, there weren't the options that there were now for sleeves. Everything was strapless.
Yeah.
So did the best of what I could.
Well, it sounds like you actually made a beautiful option. You wore that. So you wore that during the ceremony?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that brings an interesting subject up, and that is the selection of a bridal gown. Now, you talk to brides. You work with brides both through your Spoken Bride website and through your business. How do you ever advise brides on that? Have they ever asked you for your advice on how to select a gown? I mean, the trend is to get like a dozen of your closest friends and neighbors out to go shopping with you for this wedding dress.
And that can be extremely overwhelming. I actually used to work bridal, so I've seen the flip side of this. And having just a few people with you, just people that you have an intimate relationship with that you can really trust for honest opinions, is just the best way to go. And I love when people ask me for advice on gowns. I will just send them gowns that I think would look beautiful for them, and the price range is so much fun.
Yeah, yeah. Because the bridal gown is the first thing that the brides immediately gravitate towards, which is, you know, that's because we're women and we love that sensory. We love the dress. We love the accessory and the trappings. And it's kind of a way of making what's going to happen tangible and real to you and really concrete. But I think sometimes to bring too many friends into it and you're drinking champagne in the dressing room, and I'm thinking, no, it's really not like a party. It's a decision. Then you're making a huge statement through your wedding dress.
Exactly. And it should be intentional, where you go into it with some thought, thinking about what you can afford, what you like, what's respectful to wear during church, even the location where you're having your wedding, like the weather. If you're having it in the South and your reception's outside, you probably don't want a giant ball gown made of heavy silk.
Yeah, probably not. Well, actually, I was telling our listeners that I'm going to a wedding today, a very dear friend's daughter, and I was at the rehearsal because I'm going to be reading there, and the bride was very concerned because they have these chairs brought up, and she said, I don't think I can sit down in my dress. So there's all these logistics. And her mom said, well, why can't she just stand? So there's all, you know, we have to deal with the dress. The dress is an issue. Do you have any opinion about or thoughts on the size of a bridal party? Do you think bridal parties that are too large can detract? Or do you think it's whatever suits the bride and groom?
Oh, yes and no. So my parents actually win the award for the biggest bridal party that I've ever seen. They had 10 bridesmaids, 10 groomsmen, and then a court of kids with 10 girls, 10 boys, and a flower girl and a ring bearer.
What, was your mom Princess Diana or something?
Their priest was not happy about that, so I keep this lesson with me at all times. It really should be relative to the size of of your party. If you're having a wedding with 100 guests, don't have 20 people up there with you.
Yeah.
Really, between 1 and 6 is fine.
Yeah. Well, and how do you feel about children?
I love having children at weddings.
Do you?
Oh, I just think it's beautiful. I mean,
oh, children at weddings, yes, but in the wedding party.
Oh, no, I think it's great. A lot of churches actually have restrictions where they want the kids to be at least 4 or 6 years old, which I think is reasonable. But I love it. I think it's beautiful.
Well, the English love having children. It is actually really, really sweet. I have seen compilations of little videos of flower girls and ring boys that went south on you going down the aisle. In fact, they have this whole series of little boys pitching the ring pillow at the priest. It's like he gets to the end. I don't know what to do with this here. And he runs. So you always.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I've seen running.
There's always a potential for a little bit of drama. So Andy Compton, you're a wedding planner and you have your beautiful website, Spoken Bride, that advises newlyweds and engaged couples on these kinds of details. What do you think are some of the really special personal touches that a couple can infuse into their Catholic wedding ceremony? Understanding that much of the protocol is already established and not negotiable.
Well, one thing that you have total control on is the day that you get married. So pick a feast day. Pick a saint that you love.
Oh, nice.
Mary. We chose Mary's birthday, September 8th, for our wedding. We have had friends October 13th for our apparition of Our Lady of Fatima. We've had friends choose their own personal saints, like feast days, or people that they've had special devotions to. And it's just a great way to incorporate that saint in and say, if you have a big devotion to Saint Joseph, if your parish has a statue of him, you can bring flowers to Mary and maybe bring Saint Joseph some lilies as well.
Oh my goodness. That is so beautiful. I have never seen that done, but I absolutely love that idea. Andy, this is why you're good at what you do.
Thank you.
You're creative, but you're also traditional. And that's so there's so many opportunities to make a personal statement without completely discarding some of the traditions of the church.
Exactly. And a lot of couples are actually choosing to make longer wedding programs where they can incorporate quotes from saints that they like and explain the traditions to people who may not be familiar with them, who have maybe never set foot in a Catholic church before, or it's been a long time.
So what would you say to a Catholic bride, even a Catholic bride and groom, who say, you know, we want to get married in the church, we want to do it the traditional way, but we don't want to have the mass because that really elongates the ceremony and it disengages a lot of people that don't understand what's going on, a lot of our non-Catholic friends in the congregation?
Just do it. It's just so beautiful. Just the nuptial meeting of the Mass, being the bride and groom give their consent and be married, and then having the Eucharist there with, this is my body given for you, knowing that that's just what they promised to do. It's just so beautiful. There's so many graces that come from it for you, having your guests pray for you the whole time. Don't be shy about your faith. It's okay. People notice it through weddings. It's okay.
Well, it is okay, and I think actually people find it kind of fascinating.
And it can also be comforting, especially if someone hasn't gone to church in a long time. I've seen them go, wow, this isn't what I remembered it to be at all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting on that one website, The Knot. I was just kind of doing some research for this show about Catholic weddings. And The Knot is a completely nonpartisan wedding advisory thing. And so I was looking up Catholic weddings, and they were telling the reader about the different components. And they said, you do not have to choose to do a mass, but the difference is only about 16 minutes. And I thought that was really interesting, because I think that's one of the things they say, oh, it's going to make it so long, you know, and people don't understand. But it's really it's about 15 minutes more when you come right down
to it. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, exactly.
And it's well worth it. So, Andy, what do you think are some of the mistakes brides and grooms make when they're approaching their wedding planning?
Well, I love what Dr. White touched on about shying away from the unpleasant conversations. For me, I see people not wanting to talk about the budget and set a solid foundation when they plan their wedding, choosing what's important, what are their priorities, what matters to them the most, how they want to spend their money. Because once you have a solid foundation and a budget that you can work with, the decisions can flow out a lot easier.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you end up starting to book, and then go, wait, I spent how much?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it's a dangerous world out there in the wedding planning arena, because those vendors are all over you. And Etsy is telling you to do it this way and to do it that way. And don't forget to have this touch. And it's kind of overwhelming.
Exactly. And it's hard to sift through everything. That's why I always encourage people to prioritize because we have to be good stewards of the resources that God's given us.
Yeah, right. And too much is sort of lost on people, you know. Well, how do you feel, Andy, about the honeymoon? Now, I noticed that a lot of couples today are deferring their honeymoon. They might go away for a night on their wedding night and for two nights, but they have their honeymoon where they go off to a nice vacation location for, you know, they defer it for a couple of months. Do you think that's a good idea, or do you think that the honeymoon serves a purpose?
Well, I think it serves a purpose of giving them a little bit of cocoon time, but if you're able to at least spend a few nights just away, turning your phones off, mm-hmm. having that just special time, that's ideal. Everyone has to have a different length honeymoon just because of all different factors, and if you have to wait an extra couple of months, it's a couple of months, but at least take a few days to very, very get unplugged just with each other.
Okay, stay still now because your voice is starting to go elastic on us again. I love the sound of your voice, Andy.
Oh, thank you.
Let's talk now about your website, your blog. I guess you call it a blog spot, a Spoken Bride, which is a lovely, beautiful website that I would encourage all brides to go check out. The website address is SpokenBride.com. What is the origin of it, and what does it offer your subscribers or your participants?
Well, it actually started out of a conversation between two photographers, Jiza and Alyssa Voss. And they wanted to create a way for Catholic wedding vendors just to talk to each other and create community. Eventually, Jiza met Stephanie, and they just created this blog. And Alyssa and I came on board, and now we have Christina. And our goal is to present Catholic marriage as an invitation just to encounter the Catholic faith and real love through the weddings that we feature and all the reflections that we post. And we really want to create a community for engaged and newlywed women. And just, we want to tell brides that it's okay to want a beautiful wedding.
Sure.
Because that beauty reflects God. It reflects our Creator.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So what's interesting is that you actually list vendors that you sort of sanction and say, these are good people. These will give you fair quotes. They will give you good service. They will be consistent with our Catholic values. It's a very valuable list of resources for brides.
Thank you. Yeah, we're doing our best. I'm trying to get as much planning resources out there as well. To help on the more practical side, but we also have lots of reflections from women that are engaged and are newlyweds so that you can get a sense of what other people are doing, going, hey, me too.
Yeah. What do you think the bride worries about most while she's planning her wedding?
I see a lot of, is it going to be good enough? I think especially since our social media culture, you're always bombarded with tons of beautiful images via Instagram, via Pinterest. Is it going to be good enough? Are people going to remember it? But that's not what the focus is. You're creating a party and for one day, but the marriage is going to last the rest of your life.
Yeah. That's what I love about the engagement encounters or the pre-marriage prep is that it takes them away from the wedding celebration for a while and makes them dwell on the marriage that will happen after they walk out of the church into the reception.
Yeah, it's very important. Even just taking dates, maybe once a week or once a month, where you're not talking about wedding things because you have to have a relationship still.
Right. Oh, exactly. Exactly. Well, that's interesting. So, they just don't think it's going to be good enough. That I wasn't expecting that answer. And I think it's really reflective of a modern culture, too, that is always trying to up the bar. No, you're not good enough. No, you could do it this way. No, you could do it that way. I mean, some of the extravagant things that I see, even at weddings, it's just like, wow, that costs a lot of money, too. These weddings can get very expensive. And in the end, you only take your marriage away from it. So, hey, Andy Compton, thank you so much for joining us today. I want to remind our listeners of your website. It's called SpokenBride.com. And very briefly, can you tell us the origin of the name? I was thinking of like Bride Bespoke. What does Spoken Bride mean?
Well, apparently it came from a conversation that I had on Instagram with Jiza where I said something about how God really spoke to me. And even before I met her, that's how Spoken Bride came.
Oh,
it was a God thing.
So it's like God is speaking to you through, giving you the right messages, giving you the right direction. So he spoke to you and he will speak to other brides who go onto your site. So that's SpokenBride.com. Any final advice for those brides out there or girls getting married today? I'm going to a wedding. What would you tell my bride?
Breathe and be present. That's what you need to do. That's it.
Yeah.
Be present in this moment. Accept the graces.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Breathe and be present. That is good advice for a bride going into her wedding. Well, thank you, Andy Compton. You've got four young kids, so I know it's not easy to spare this kind of time on a Saturday. You're such a blessing to our church and to brides everywhere. SpokenBride.com. Andy Compton, God bless you. Keep up the good work.
God bless. Thank you.
Thanks for talking with us. Hey, Jimmy G, I got to get home. I got a wedding to go to today.
I was going to say a good advice would be don't be Bridezilla. but I didn't say it.
Yeah, but here's the problem with that. Bridezillas never know they're being Bridezilla. They never see the Zilla for the bride.
We're not still on the air, are we?
Yeah, we are on the bride. We are. And there's probably some Bridezillas out there saying, that's not me.
No.
Yeah, but I'm, you know what? On the flip side, there are some mothers who can be terrible to work with. And that's of course, I don't want to be that mother as our son and his fiance plan their wedding. But it's very easy for either one of the parties involved, any of the parties involved, to sort of own it. Like, this is mine and you're going to do it my way. And I loved both Andy and Joseph's message of clear reason, breathe, be present. We can work this out. We can make it happen.
Exactly.
And in the end, God is sanctifying your marriage, and that is the big gift of the day. You know what? We have some other great gifts of the day for you to listen to on EWTN today. We've got The Good Fight with Barbara McGuigan coming up right after us. She is speaking today with Father Fessio of Ignatius Press and also with Jimmy Akin. Jimmy Akin makes the rounds here at EWTN. He's an expert on everything. And then there's The Catholic Cafe with Deacon Jeff and Vacation Boom with Jerry Usher. We got lots and lots of good programming here on EWTN. So don't you dare leave the dial. Don't forget about that Apple TV so you can watch all these people. And Jimmy G, I want you to have a grand and glorious Father's Day because you deserve it. You're a good father. I hear you talk about your kids with such great affection.
I am blessed, no question about it. Love my kiddos. It is a huge blessing being a dad.
Well, I want to give a shout out to my husband, who is an amazing dad, raised three sons. I knew nothing about boys, so he stepped in and he said, this is how we raise good sons, and boy, was he successful. I love you, Jimmy, and happy Father's Day. I'm my Jimmy at home and my Jimmy across the dial here. Hey, tune in next week, same day, same time, for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I'm Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.